So, I am here first and foremost to say thank you to this body. The Alaska Statehood Celebration Commission was impaneled, created by the 23rd Legislature. We were created in January of 2005. We were funded by the 24th Legislature, $300,000 to implement and plan and implement statewide statehood celebration activities. And the 25th Legislature was able to enjoy the fruits of our work across the state. And I have several statewide representatives of communities who actually performed the activities and created the best celebrations that we have had so far. The commission was created with 9 members, 5 members who were public and 4 members who were legislative appointments. There are one member from each judicial district on the public side and a governor's appointment. As well, the 4 legislators, we had a minority and majority from both houses. So our commission was formed to plan and administer all of these statehood activities, and we were also set by the body to create a timetable and a plan and implement our activities.
I'll let the record reflect that we've been joined by Senator Menard.
So I apologize for the state of the presentation. Our fonts have switched around somewhat. The vision of our activities that we planned and executed was to honor our history and celebrate our future. Our mission was to inspire the people of this great state and across the world to rejoice in Alaska's past, present, and our prominent future. Further, we were planned to honor and celebrate Alaska's native heritage culture, and those instrumental in the statehood and Alaska's constitution and the creation of the state, and Alaska's achievements and opportunities, and especially to honor and celebrate our children and our future.
Let the record reflect that Senator Thomas has joined us.
So some of the work that we actually accomplished in the beginning, and I would say to the chair was actually one of the founding members of this committee, and that changed over time because of commitments and because of the nature of your organization. But we organized to establish subcommittees to plan for budget, public relations, to create a website that was a clearinghouse for statewide activities, to engage in joint projects with municipalities, universities, civic organizations, and nonprofits across the state as much as possible. Also to initiate a effective and fair process to solicit ideas for celebrating the 50th anniversary of statehood, as well as to provide what resources we could to help communities get organized and to implement. And finally, to look at statehood projects and perhaps some legacy projects that could last into the future. We created an array of projects, and items have been created. And the public sector has really stepped up in the creation of items to commemorate and celebrations. We early on decided that our mission was going to be to help communities organize and to create activities, but some key elements were important to get things rolling. And the first thing that we engaged in was creation of our logo, which you probably have noticed is pretty ubiquitous. It's about everywhere you go. It's on your Wells Fargo ATM when you put in a charge card. It's everywhere. Earlier in the committee in the House side, they asked who designed the logo, and it was Dean Potter, who is formerly a Sitka artist who now lives in Anchorage. He also designed the license plate that was unveiled last January, a year ago, and runs through the end of this year before we have a new design. Also, we authorized the creation of a statehood medallion, which is a recast of the original medallion that the very first legislature authorized through concurrent resolution number 1 of the first legislature. And so this is exactly the same, except the date is different. So, and it was made by the Medallic Art Company. Something nice about this piece, this item, is that the Statehood Celebration Commission provided funding for the creation of these, and then these were actually provided to communities across the state to use as fundraising tools, because they have a value. For those of you interested in putting these medallions in your pocket, we have a reception at 5:30 today, and if you come, we have one for you. So,
quite the incentive.
It is. And they'll be right next door in the Farron Camp room. Another great item we have that just was released on January 3rd was the U.S. postage stamp for Alaska statehood. It's up in the presentation there. And an oddity I like to point out is that it's in fact a crime for the Postal Service to put a living person recognized on a stamp. And for some reason, they did it. And so our stamp is a little bit of an outlaw. An amazing project that is just about to come fully to fruition is the Alaska Airlines Paint the Plane project. And this project was put out as a competition to every student in the state, public, private schools, homeschools, but every grade level to submit designs. And 12 finalists were selected, one from each grade level. And the winning design was actually a young woman of 16 out of Sitka, whose design was selected, and it's a truly beautiful design. I will pass the Daily News cutting out for you. Her motto was, "We're all pulling together." And this plane is actually just finished being painted, and we know that it's going to be unveiled in Sitka next Thursday. It will come up to Anchorage, Fairbanks, and then make a quick pass through Juneau. So I don't know if they'll craft an opportunity, but I'm hoping your Juneau celebration folks will be able to make that possible. And so that is going to last for about the next 7 or 8 years in service, which is really nice. So, you know, there were several important dates in the statehood process. June 28, 1958 was the passage of the Statehood Act in the Congress and the House. July the 7th was the passage of the Statehood Act and signed by, I think we have that a little off. Okay, the Statehood Act was signed by President Eisenhower July the 7th, 1958. There was actually a vote, a plebiscite, in August the 26th by the voters of Alaska to ratify the Statehood Act. And then on January 3rd, 1959, President Eisenhower signed a proclamation that made our statehood official. And so part of our planning for these statehood celebrations was to try to find in the larger communities across the state some opportunity to incentivize them to start planning around these dates and help kind of create some actual concrete dates of activities. And so Fairbanks, Juneau, and Anchorage will be able to talk about the activities that they performed along those dates and other activities as well. Part of our outreach, the events, the activities, the work we've done, these events have been attended by thousands and thousands of Alaskans across the state, tourists and international dignitaries. The Statehood Commission has actually participated in local statewide fundraising events, especially through the medallion. Collateral materials, some of which you see in front of you, there's the pins, we have pens, buttons, posters, etc., which will be in the room for the reception for you to see up close. We were able to distribute those. I think we've determined we distributed about 25,000 pins and maybe some more. And our logo has been used all over the place, as I said before. I guess it hasn't made it to Juneau, but it's even on a Coca-Cola can. You know, when you've made it on a Coke can, you've made it, right? So some of the upcoming activities of the commission, our plans are to continue assisting communities across the state to plan and execute activities. Some people say, aren't we done with that? But really, this whole year is a year of marking statehood celebrations. One project we're talking about on the commission is to send a care package, if you will, to all of our deployed National Guardsmen who haven't been able to be here for the celebration, to let them know they're part of the show, that we respect them and that, you know, we're thinking of them. The third, we're working with the tourism industry across the state. I think that Princess has on all their ships materials of our logo for this whole cruise season. And we're working with the university, the state museum, and the library for preservation and archiving of the work we're doing. And I think some of the important things to think about from a concluding perspective is how are we going to make this successful for the 100th year or maybe the 75th anniversary. And so we're actually talking about that among the commission members, making recommendations that hopefully you as a body can put somewhere in the record so that people can find it, because when we started, we really found that there wasn't a record for us to follow, and it became kind of a challenge. I guess I will conclude here pretty quickly and say that we had some amazing and brilliant inspirational activities across the state, and you know, we had a hard time reaching some of the more rural areas, and we're working to reach out to them. They really because Anchorage has the resources, or Fairbanks and Juneau, we were able to put on some brilliant events. And we were able to share those events statewide, and you'll hear some about that shortly. Some of the partners that we like to recognize on the record, Alaska Airlines, they really pulled in, Alaska Railroad. And of note, this week you've been seeing visits from the Travel Industry Association. And it should be noted, on our big event, January 3rd, we had worldwide press. It was the most incredible thing. I looked on the internet to see who's talking about what, every point around the globe, and it was the travel industry who got the message out. You know, the governor's office sent press releases to 50 different delegations out there, but the press release from the TIA was everywhere. And so they did some amazing work in helping this activity move along. So I would come back and conclude at the very end, but now I would like to have our local representatives come up and tell you briefly what they performed in their community, so you can have detail on what the specific celebration activities were that were inspired. And so I would ask Leo Rasmussen of Nome to come up.
And I'm sorry, I should have recognized Mayor Rasmussen, who's been the mayor at Nome, has been somebody I've known for almost 50 years when he came down to Golovin working as the fish and game person back in the early 60s. And so certainly been well known, and the mayor for Nome for, was it 25 years or 27 years or something?
With that, do I need to introduce myself?
For the record, Mr. Mayor, why don't you go ahead and do that?
I'm Leo Rasmussen, and I'm a member of the Statehood Celebration Commission, primarily from Nome, Alaska. In the process, Nome was very much a hotbed, as you know, Senator Olson, in attempting to move towards statehood. In fact, we had the first federal elected representative to Congress coming from Nome, so it's been a part of our lifestyle from the very beginning. And our beginning was 1899 with the discovery of gold, so there have been many things before that. But our program was put together attempting to create some signature events that we thought would at least scale comparable to the larger communities. And on the evening of the 31st of December 2008, we put together 8 stars of gold, and they are passing around. I don't think you have received yours yet, but what we did was we had 8 bonfires offshore Nome, and you can see Nome in the background, and Icy View, and then Nome Belts High School, which was named after William E. Belts, in the background.
He's up on the wall there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, correct. I was sitting under him. The intent was to have something that we could stream out. I'd been a part of attempting to get bonfires statewide and then use the satellite, which all fell apart because of fire marshals and fire decrees. We had things lined out here in Juneau, and of course the fire marshal stamped that one out, and Homer got stamped out, and I just sort of fell apart. So we decided to go ahead in Nome with the 8 stars of gold. That actual Big Dipper that you see on there is 2 miles long and a mile deep. Star number 6, which was mine, was about 100 feet from open water, but we had plenty secure ice. We were driving vehicles on it, as you well know, having spent your life in Northwest Alaska. We had hoped that this would be a signature event to tie in with what else took place. We streamed that photo everywhere, including here and in Juneau, to the newspapers, to international, national press, AP, UPI. Nobody picked it up, and we were sort of distraught with it. However, if you wish, we're attempting to make a 20 by 30 of this for future display, and we would be honored to provide you with a copy of that once Peggy Fagerstrom actually gets it off, if it doesn't eat an entire cartridge of black ink per photo. That was the beginning of the starting of our celebration. We went on to have a torchlight parade. Glow sticks do work at 20 below, I can tell you that, if you ever have to. They are immensely beautiful late at night at 20 below. They photograph well for any future event, should you have to do that. We attempted to put together a 49-50 sparkle, 50-foot numbers with a slash, and 49 and 50, with people standing there with sparklers. 20 below is not a good idea. They burn beautiful holes in synthetic coats. I was afraid we might get sued in the end, but the picture is beautiful, two different colors. That didn't go anywhere either. We created what probably is a world record. We created a 1,100-pound baked Alaska, six quarts of Everclear on top of it to flame it. At 20 below, it works. It's the most beautiful blue you've ever seen. Took us 3 days to get rid of 80 square feet of cake. We continued our birthday celebration indoor, Old St. Joe's. Senator Olson made a presentation on statehood did a very admirable job, donated to the city of Nome a 49-star flag that was in a plaque that I believe originally served during the 49th, in the original celebration. We enjoyed doing what we were doing. We haven't quit. We have three other events. I don't think that there'll be signature events, but we're attempting to pull off an original 4th of July as it was held in the early first 5 to 10 years of Nome's history. We usually become very good friends with every mother in town with the greased pole, which the kids attempt to climb and pick a $50 bill off of the top. And many of the old signature events of 4th of July will take place with a picnic for anyone and everyone. I wanted to thank you for allowing us to play around with this and create some very neat happenings. Out of the whole thing, I think the bonfires was the biggest disaster of all because we now have fire marshals and didn't have them back then. So we did, if you'll notice, this is the official Iditarod Trail mail that was carried over the trail. The official banner of the 50th year celebration went with every musher in a packet of 22. We did as much as we could, we left with the State House of Representatives Committee a 50-year banner with the actual postmark that we created for the 50th year celebration cancellation on the stamp on that, and it's for everyone's use here in the state capitol. I want to thank you especially for allowing us to enjoy playing around with the 50-year celebration. Thank you for this time.
Any members of the committee have questions of Leo Rasmussen? If not, thank you. Next up we have is Darrell Shea.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm Casa Corpola. I'm here from Capital City Celebrations, the Juno group that was formed to plan events and host events for the commemoration of the statehood. Our group was formed in November of 2007 at the request of Mayor Botello, and we have been working fast and furious to catch up with some of the people who got an earlier start than we did, but we have 8 members on our board, and we meet monthly, and we also hold monthly volunteer meetings so that we can attract people in the community to help us out, and it's been a partnership that has worked very well for us. We're very proud of the people in the community for not only helping us with our projects, but also attending all of our events and supporting us. Our first event was in June of 2000. Our first event was a partnership with the Juno Symphony, where they presented a piece entitled The Alaska Symphony that was written in the 1940s but had never been performed in this state. And it was wonderful working with them. We helped them provide the music. It was in an archive, was found by one of the curators at the State Historical Library, and so we resurrected it from the dust and recreated it, put the music to it. It was a wonderful event, and it commemorated the passage of the Statehood Act by Congress in 1958. We've hosted quite a few events over the last year, dessert competitions, wine tasting. We hosted the First Ladies of Alaska Tea at the Governor's Mansion, and along in a partnership with the First Gentleman. And we had cruise ship lunch, partnered with quite a few groups like the 4th of July Parade Committees in 2008 and again this year. Eagle Crest Ski Area, the Perseverance Theater, and a local women's golfing group that wanted to hold an event here. And I think it was one of the few nice days that we had. We also had a ball, the 50th anniversary ball on January 3rd, that was a big party downtown. And the following day, we sponsored, along with BP, a fireworks display out in the valley. Our last event of the year will be the 4th of July this year. And we're working with the Juno Douglas Museum to reenact the flag-raising ceremony that was held here in 1959. We're working with the parade committee to recreate some of those original floats. We're bringing back the queen and her court. And if anybody happens to be in the neighborhood, we'd love to have you join us for the festivities. We're going to have a big parade and a community picnic following that, and a big dance as well. We have worked very hard to fund our projects and now look forward to finishing our year out working on a legacy project for Juno that will serve as a reminder for perpetuity for the 50th celebration year. And we'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for allowing us the opportunity to work on this. We've met wonderful people throughout the state in our partnership to see the 50th year of our 50th anniversary celebrated. So thank you so much.
Thank you for your presentation. Any questions of Ms. Corpola?
One other reminder is that we're partnering with Perseverance Theater for a production tomorrow night at the Old Elks Lodge down on just below the Baranoff Hotel. It's called Eight Stars of Gold, and it will be memories of people involved in the creation of the state, and we'd love to have you attend and enjoy a cake with us.
And that's here in Juneau. Yes. And not the Perseverance Theater over in...
What time was that?
7:30.
Michelle Roberts.
Oh, this is so fun.
I know.
Yes. We're the flag wavers here.
My name is Michelle Roberts, and I'm the executive director of Festival Fairbanks in Fairbanks, Alaska. Mm-hmm. And as I told the House earlier today, there's probably no one more acutely aware in this room of when the state turns 50 than myself, because I was born in 1959. So it was a milestone for me as well. For that reason, we have a major portion of our focus is on 2009. We were tasked by the Alaska Statehood Celebration Commission to do the May 28th event, which was when the House of Representatives, the U.S. House of Representatives, passed the Alaska Statehood Act. And what we did was a week-long celebration. We had Trace Adkins, Elton John, a barbecue bonfire and bonfire. We didn't burn the meat. Barbecue and a bonfire. And we served over 2,000 people in 2 hours. And we had folks like Senator Stevens and Senator Murkowski and a lot of people there. It was great fun and some pyrotechnics that went along with that. We also had our first official Alaska Kite Day, which will be resurrected again this year. We had a very windy May all the way up until about noon on the 31st when we opened that box of kites. And then it got real still. But we also had an event that was highlighting our businesses past, present, and future. We did the largest fireworks show that's ever been shot in Fairbanks. However, it was not on the 3rd of February because we were experiencing 42 below and ice fog. It was unsafe conditions for people to view, and it was also impossible to see the fireworks. So we held off until the 17th and then had one heck of a show. And my claim to fame is we gridlocked the west side of town. It took 20 minutes to go a quarter of a mile. So I figured we had some really great people that were out and enjoying that. We are finishing the Chena River Walk, which is a project that we started in recognition of the centennial of the city of Fairbanks, and then we've carried it on, and the completion of the south side will be done this year all the way to Pegger Road, And then we're going to enlist the help of our local representatives and senators to help us work through some details with Alaska Railroad, because our legacy project is to complete the Riverwalk so that we have a complete loop that goes from the William Ransom Wood Centennial Bridge to Pegger Road and then back again on the north side. All of the other property owners that we've spoken with are in complete agreement with us that they want to be a part of this. So we just have a few details to work out. We were able to bring the torch, the 50th anniversary torch, to Fairbanks, to the Ice Park for the Ice Alaska World Championships. And Dorothy Hamill was actually interviewed in front of it. So it got some national coverage as well. And we are working with local social, civic, and service groups to make sure that everybody who has annual events, semi-annual reunions, that type of thing, adopts our logo. Everywhere you turn in Fairbanks, it's there. We've got banners going up on Airport Road. We are producing a 50th anniversary wine. It's a Cabernet out of Napa Valley, just FYI. And and the last thing I wanted to let you know is that through our beautification efforts in Fairbanks and in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, our color scheme this year is going to be blue and gold, the state colors. So we are just revving up and raring to go, and we probably will slow down January 3rd of 2010.
Any questions, Mr. Roberts? Senator French.
More of a comment than a question. I just want to thank you and the rest of the commission, the folks who are, you know, making the commission and making this all happen, for coming to Juneau and telling us about your the work you've done. I have to go next door and present a bill, but I was downtown Anchorage on January 3rd when the fireworks there went off, and I'll never forget it. It was just the most stunning display of fireworks I've ever seen, ever hoped to see. It was just, it was out of this world. And I want to thank you all for your efforts. I enjoyed it. My wife enjoyed it. You know, it was a great, great night. And so congratulations to you all.
Thank you. Thank you.
And one of the questions I do have has to do with the loop road that you were talking about, one of the legacy projects.
Yes, sir.
And how much longer before you think that's going to be finished?
We're finishing the south side of the riverbank this year. Mm-hmm. The north side directly depends on the cooperation that we receive from the Alaska Railroad, which at this point has been less than eager.
Yes.
We're offering to improve their land to the tune of about $4.5 million. And so far, they only want to give us permission to build the trailhead. We'll let you put $1.5 million in, and then we'll talk. And I said, that's not a responsible position for me to take representing the community. We need to know that we have right of way to complete the entire bike path before we start turning soil. So we may start from the east and work west, and then the pressure will start to build. But I think also that we can get a lot of help through Juneau, because as we all know, the Alaska Railroad Corporation is owned by the state of Alaska, and that's us. So we'd like to see more opportunities in Fairbanks like Anchorage has enjoyed, like Ship Creek, those types of developments that the railroad has put a lot of money and time into, especially because we're not asking them for money. We're asking for right-of-way, and then we will maintain it. We'll construct it and maintain it, but we don't want their land. So
let us know how we can help you.
I certainly will. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
My name is Darrell Schaff, and along with Denise Owens, I was one of the two planners and coordinators for the 50th anniversary of statehood celebrations in Anchorage and for the statewide efforts that came from that. Our approach was a little bit different, and that's why they had me come last. We were tasked with January 3rd. That was the original task that we took on. We decided as an organization, we had a board and we were working through the Alaska Community Foundation. We decided that the January 3rd should be a giant kickoff for the year, and in order to do that, we wanted to create momentum. So I'm not going to go through all of the events, but they actually started in January with the unveiling of the license plate, and there were about 18 events. I do want to highlight about four of those events very quickly.
Just get the lights on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Great. Part of our task, as you probably know, we put together a plan that was that really was about hosting the state of Alaska and the world to Alaska. And we came to the legislature, and we were awarded an amount of money that the others did not get. And we've talked about that, and they all hate me, but Sorry. No. No, I don't. What I'd like to tell you is that we took that $1 million and we took our challenge to make all of those things work very, very seriously. We raised an additional $1.2 million, of which nearly $1 million of that we raised by earning the income rather than contributed income. We tried to make a very clean effort to not compete with existing nonprofits and things, because this is one of those glamorous one-time things that often will steal money out of people's pockets. So we're very proud of the fact that we earned an additional $1 million to match that. With that, we did a number of things. For the June 28th, we decided that we would work with the military and we would do some sort of tribute, because the military had been a very important part of our history. We worked with them on their air show, and we put together a thing called We're In Weekend. The weekend lasted, it was actually over a three-day period. It involved the air show, it involved concerts downtown. We reenacted the pinning of the 49th star on the flag, and instead of having Rita Gravel, we had Katie Hurley and Vic Fisher, who came and did it very graciously. And instead of having someone climb up a ladder, the fire department actually helped us, and it was a much better show. Thousands of people attended that, I'm happy to say. And along with that, we did the first of our series of events that reached out into the world. We produced an original concert from a military, the Elmendorf Air Force Base. We took a 1940s hangar and we converted it into a concert stage. We brought in Winona Judd. It became so big, the military was all involved, and she brought her mother and they did a reunion concert, and it went live all over the state of Alaska, which I was very proud of. 230,000 households had access to that concert live, and this was all free. 10,000 people physically showed up on the base to watch the concert. And with that, we got AT&T interested, and they ended up broadcasting it over what's called the Blue Room, which is an international network. And we also worked directly with the military, filmed this, and on the 4th of July, it was shown on the Armed Forces Network to anyone who wanted to. They weren't forced to, but on the 4th of July, any deployed military person anywhere in the world, including ships, this concert was on, coming live from Anchorage, Alaska, as a gift from the state of Alaska to the military. So we thought that was very important. The second group we wanted to acknowledge were the political structure and the people who had really done something.
The chair is a bond of aviation expert in
Illinois. Oh, okay. All right. The bonfire is a huge issue, as Leo pointed out. So we decided that we did want to do a bonfire because there was so much pressure. And of course, the first thing was, can't you just do it on the Park Strip in downtown Anchorage, which is now lined with million-dollar homes? That was a bad idea. The military decided they would work with us. And so they collected, because they're clearing a lot of Elmendorf, they collected 30 tons of logs and debris and all sorts of things. And so they, to make it feel a little more real, we used a B-25 and a fake bomb, filled the entire thing, filled with pyro, flew this B-25 down and dropped a bomb on top of it, and it exploded. And I have a picture of it in here that you're welcome to see later.
Must have been impressive.
So it was very impressive. And the general was out there. He's like, yeah, that's a good one. So that was the first. The second one was that we wanted to pay tribute to the politicians. And so we put together a program where we brought back twice all of the living governors of Alaska. There are two governors that obviously have been deceased, but we involved their families. The first time we brought them back, they worked with us to create a piece that we call The Legacy of Alaska. And we did this on the 25th anniversary. And this is a piece. It's a Sidney Lawrence. It's a Giclée print. It's signed by all eight of the living governors. And we included Stepovich because of his relationship. All of those people came together. That was one of our biggest fundraisers. And with that, we raised about $425,000. So that was a huge success for us. And we knew it would be, because the one we did 25 years earlier had been. With that money, we then presented a Governor's Legacy Dinner. This was a dinner. It was limited to 500 only because that was the maximum number of people that we could get into the place. And it was completely sold out. And the thing I'm most proud of is that not one politician spoke that evening. It was quite the conversation as to who would get to speak. And there were eight of them. And of course, they all wanted to speak. And gosh, that would have been a long evening. So we decided that we wouldn't have anyone speak. And everyone who came was thrilled. It turned out to be a fabulous evening. That was one of the projects that we designed to be self-sufficient. Some of the projects were designed to be used specifically for state money. All of those projects were completely free. Projects that we wanted to do that couldn't be free had to be self-sufficient. And so all of those projects are self-sufficient. I'll skip to the end of the process now. A number of things have happened. we get to New Year's Eve through January 3rd. We sold this all over the world, all over the country, as come to Alaska and enjoy New Year's Eve, stay for this moment in history. We made a deal with Alaska Airlines, who stepped up and gave half-price tickets to Anchorage for that week. I can tell you that during that week, our organization had over 1,000 Alaskans being paid to work on these projects, which included about 700 artists from all over Alaska who performed on a variety of days. After New Year's Eve, we did the gala. The gala was 1,500 people at the new Denina Convention Center. We had 47 dignitaries from other countries who came as part of the State Department. We only had 4 people who spoke all evening, which was also good. I'm a big believer in enjoy the evening. We televised that entire evening statewide again so that people who couldn't pay to come would have access to it. It would be for free. That afternoon and the following day, we did one of the things that I think was most exciting. We invited 2 delegates from cities and from villages and places to come to Anchorage. And we had representatives from 27 villages and cities that came to Anchorage. And we put together this Pledge of Unity, where we held a reception at ConocoPhillips. And the pledge basically says that even though we fight, we do all sorts of things, for the next 50 years, we think maybe we'll just try to work together a little more and make it a better place. This now has been made available to the entire school district of the state. Right now, they're in the Anchorage school districts. They're being sent around. There are 2 originals. One will come here. One will be in the museum in Anchorage. And that one I can leave if you'd like. 2 other projects that I'll throw in. The next day, let me finish this story. The next day, these delegates and the Conference on Young Alaskans all came together in Anchorage. We gave them all lights. They came down the street, and Arla Sturgeluski was with a young Native girl that was with her, and which represented sort of the old guard and the new guard. And each one of these symbolically came up and touched their light to a torch, and the torch then lit. This was the light of the North. This is a replica. This piece is actually solid stainless steel. It's over 9 feet tall, and it was designed so that each of these 4 panels, which are lit from the back, come off and can be permanently adhered. And I've been talking to Bruce Cato at the museum here about having one come to Juneau, one go to Fairbanks, one will stay in Anchorage, and we're trying right now to negotiate one to go to the Smithsonian Alaska exhibit as part of this. Before I talk about the Day of Statehood, 2 more very quick things. You don't get to keep that, but you can show it off. There's only a few of those. Everybody wants one. Our legacy project we developed at the new Lenny Priscillo parking garage, which is the state parking garage in Anchorage. We developed a bronze plaque history walk, which is a permanent installation there now. We've published enough of these books so that school children and tourists can all get them. We've made them available also to your offices, and so if you need some or want some, it's a nice little thing to give, because it captures 16 important moments in the history of statehood. And there's pictures of the plaques and things. The other project that I'm wildly excited about, this was my favorite project, we decided to really try to reach out into Alaska, into the rural communities, and try to touch people's lives. So we sent out a call for quilt panels. And we received, and the panel could only be 24 by 30 inches, we received a gazillion of them. And every day when they would come, it was like Christmas. We'd open it up, and each one was more interesting and more beautiful than the one before. We took those quilts, and we worked with the Alaska Fiber Festival, and we put them together into panels. And I'm happy to say that the show premiered in the Anchorage Museum, but is now currently booked for the entire year, touring all over the state. And the work of these people is just brilliant. And this book, I'll be happy to let you take a quick look at. It captures the individual pieces and their stories, and it's a great reading. So if people would like a copy of that, I can make that available. The last thing we did was the Day of Statehood. This was January 3rd. Our goal was to try to make an enormous celebration that really included all of the people of Alaska and all the people of the world. And so we created in 7 venues everything that was open that we could do, stages and everything. We had hundreds and hundreds of entertainers. Everything was free to the public. We had family entertainment that was remarkable. We had the highest caliber professional talent, but everyone who performed, everyone was from Alaska. On our gala, we had over 300 people on the stage performing, and every one of those performers was Alaskan, and every person in that room was so proud to be part of that whole piece. We viewed this as economic impact. We wanted to have economic impact. We wanted to have world impact. We got so much press, it was unbelievable. Between the concert, the Denina Center Gala, the two statewide teleconferences or telecasts. We also had, as I said, over 1,000 people working, and we know as a fact that we documented over 500 room nights that were rented between January 1st and January 3rd in Anchorage downtown. And in January, to put 500 people in rooms, or 500 rooms full of people, is a huge economic impact. So we're very proud of what we did. There was a book being published. This will be the last thing I say. There's a book being published. I always say that's the last thing I'm going to say. It's not really. And you will get a copy of this. Unfortunately, it wasn't done. And it documents many of the things we're talking about, and it captures some of the really exciting, amazing things that happened. For 2009, we are going to finish the tour of the quilt project. We're going to do the installation of the panels, will be one of our dictates. I'm happy to say that we also just endowed the Anchorage Museum with a very large endowment that will pay to digitize 140,000 historic photographs from the period. So that'll be the largest single collection of photographs that have been done. And we have set up a fund at the Alaska Community Foundation for the 75th anniversary of statehood. And everything that we do this year that makes money, anything we sell, medallions, anything else, 100% of that money will go into that fund and be there for whoever is still alive 25 years from now and wants to do this thing. And with that, I thank you unbelievably, because it has been, for me, the most remarkable 2 years of my life.
We have a question from Senator Bernard.
Yes. Just a comment, because this is right up my alley. That's the kind of personality I am. But isn't it true that these the painting is, or the prints are worth $1,500, and they're for sale for $1,500?
Yes, and there are some. There are still.
There still are done, some available.
They're still left. Yes, and I can tell you that I view them as an investment in the future, because when we did this 25 years ago, we sold them for $500, and they now sell for $5,000. So these are interesting things.
Yes.
This is the book.
And these are books that we'll get a...
You will get a copy of this book. And, well, you'll get a copy of all three of the books, the quilt book, the bronze plaque book, and this photographic book.
Well,
and if you come tonight, you'll get a...
Just as a I just kind of feel like there's some karma with this, because as a new legislator, when I got here, when I looked for my parking spot, guess what number I got? 49th state.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's wonderful.
So, and I am so appreciative of Denise Owens. She was my neighbor in 1968 on Elmendorf Air Force Base.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, she's been around a long time. Yeah.
She's very enthusiastic, yeah, and right, just a wonderful artist.
And we worked together on this the whole year. Yeah.
Business.
Yeah. Brings a huge energy to
a winner to pick there. So yeah, you've done a stellar job on this celebration, and I really appreciate your enthusiasm.
Thank you very much.
Any further questions, Mr. Schaff? If not, we'll have Chris Constant come back up for some closing comments.
All right, Christopher Constant for the record. And so back in 2003, I worked at the Alaska Humanities Forum. And it was in my work there that I really thought this is an important project to start looking at. The timing was great, and we started with work on the Constitutional Convention. And since that time, we have helped to inspire many, many people to be involved. And my hope from the beginning was it wouldn't be all beer gardens and bonfires, that bonfires and beer gardens are great, but that we have some important work to do to communicate to the future young people, especially those young people today who will be able to say, I met Katie Hurley 50 years from now at our 100th anniversary of statehood, that hand will be reaching into the past directly. And so I think that we've managed to achieve that in a lot of different ways. A couple projects, you know, the Rasmussen Foundation, and I would spell it Rasmusson, just so you get it right. They contributed $1 million to important humanities projects, the study of the history, the creation of documentaries, the creation of new artworks to interpret. And so it definitely is important that they're recognized on the record and spelled right for their work, because they really made a massive investment. And that was in partnership with the Humanities Forum that I'm no longer employed with or associated with, but must also include them in the thanks. And that really concludes the testimony. We have to say thank you again, and to know that we will come back with a final report that makes recommendations for the future on how it could be even better next time, to learn from our mistakes and learn from our strengths. And hope that's communicated forward by this body so that 12 legislatures from now, or maybe 25, there is a record. Thank you very much.
Any questions of Mr. Constant? Senator
Just
Bernard?
Just one last comment. In the stimulus package, which you, Chris, are aware of, there was $300,000 for National Endowment for the Arts. Mm-hmm. And so the powers to be in this room that believe in the arts, I served on the Governor's Arts Council, as I do, the residents, and if there's any message you can get back to accept that money, because truly, arts as well as music, they develop the left side of the brain, and it is so important, and there's so many struggling artists and such fantastic artists in the state of Alaska that this is such a boost. Mm-hmm. And I would just encourage you from your acquaintances to do what you can to help encourage right. that we accept that money for the National Endowment for Arts.
And through the chair, Senator Menard, I would also recommend, if you have friends in Juneau's government down here, that there is actually money available in the competitive funds from the National Endowment for the Arts that only two organizations in Alaska is eligible to apply for. And it's up to $250,000 to re-grant funds to arts organizations. And so I fully support the approach to the legislature to accept those dollars. And I also would hope that Juneau, as the local granting agency of city government, would also take that approach. And I think their deadline is April 12th. And so if there's anyone who knows the local group, get on board, because that could double the money available to Alaskan arts and culture organizations.
What are the name of the two groups?
Excuse me? Oh, it's the state entity, Alaska State Council on the Arts, but they feel they can't apply for both funds sure. as a conflict, and so it's only them and Juneau, because they have the power of local granting authority through the Juneau Arts and Humanities to actually do that. And so there is hope. Let's work together and get it. And thank you again.
Any further questions of Chris Constant? If not, I do have one question that has to do with the legacy projects. How many are still out there, and what are they?
Oh boy, that's a tough question to answer. Mm-hmm. Every community that I know of is really still working on making things happen. I know that the State Museum, we've been working with them to consider several projects, and that is one of those projects they're working on funding right now and developing. I know that we are working to collect every item that we have had our hands on to go into a permanent collection at the State Museum as well. I mean, every community, it's really hard to say what. And you know what I would like to do is come back to you with a report on that will state in a clear and decisive way, these are the things that we see are moving forward. So,
okay. Senator Bernard.
Just one last comment. And, of course, there's only one Alaska State Fair, and it's in the Matsu Valley in Palmer, Alaska.
Right.
And we have a wonderful parade. And if I think the lady here from Juneau is doing a parade for this celebration, if we could maybe even borrow some of her ideas, and it would be a wonderful thing to enter as an entry for that parade.
And to the chair,
and that's
Senator Menard.
The first weekend of when the fair opens.
And that's in Palmer, or the fair has a parade?
It's in Palmer, but it's called the Alaska State Parade.
Okay, I hadn't heard of that, and I'll make sure that we look into that. So, again, if there are no more comments, I just
I do have
you.
one
please,
final comment.
Please.
The stainless steel engravings are from the flame that was over the three, one going to Anchorage, one going to Fairbanks, one coming to Juneau, and for some reason the Smithsonian doesn't have any room. I think that Nome can probably accept it on behalf of the former mayor. With that, Mr. Constant, thank you very much for your presentation
you,
this afternoon.
Thank you.
And for those commissioners that were part of the Alaska Statehood Celebration Commission, thank you for coming and presenting to us.
And thank you for your service as well, Senator Olson.
Mm-hmm. Take a brief at ease. We'll call this meeting back to order. Next we have on our agenda is Senate Bill 137, reporting on the meetings for the Board of Fisheries. We'll have Senator Bundy come on up and present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you hearing the bill. Mr. Chairman, I've dabbled in commercial fishing, and I'm a longtime sport fisher and personal use fisher, but I don't have a dog in this fight. I just, I've heard conversations from folks that the Board of Fish meetings perhaps are not on an optimal schedule at this point. You'll find some backup information in the sponsor statement that There are people in the Department of Fish and Game take about an entire year to prepare for a Board of Fish meeting. Then we have the meeting, and before the results of the decisions that they've made are really in, which, of course, the salmon cycle can take between 2 and 6 years, before the results are in, the Department of Fish and Game, again, are spending a year preparing for new proposals. I don't have the wisdom to know what is the correct segment of time between proposals, but this bill simply asks the board to report back to the legislature what do they think is the appropriate time span between meetings that will allow them to be most productive, allow enough information feedback so that the department can give them, give the board good information. And there is one other thing that I've asked. They often get repetitive proposals. And each year, or each board cycle, they have to address those proposals, provide all the research. And, of course, the end result is often the same. But there's a lot of what I would call perhaps unnecessary busy work because of the repetitive proposals. And this, again, I don't know, I don't have the wisdom of Solomon, but I don't know how to suggest that they deal with these without disenfranchising the public. But again, I've asked them to simply report back to us any recommended changes. And we're nowhere does a bill try to second guess the Board of Fish. It simply asks their expertise to allow us to help them be more efficient.
And them means the Board of Fish? When you talk about them, you're talking about
the Board of Fish. Okay. Yes, thank you. I think it allows our Department of Fish and Game to be more efficient in use of their staff. So that's the essence of the bill. There are some other folks who would like to testify. I did get a late arriving letter of support from the Southeast Saners, and we could share that with the committee. If you'd like, there's some other letters of support and other folks that have an opinion about this. And with that, I'd be available for questions.
Any members of the committee have questions for Senator Bundy? Senator Bernard.
I do. There's no fiscal note with this. Do they get like a stipend when they meet the Board of Fisheries? Is there...
Actually, Senator Bernard, there is a fiscal note. I don't know if you've gotten a copy of it.
I didn't get a copy of it. I'm sorry.
And it's a zero fiscal note in line with what the sponsor normally likes to see.
Yeah. Well, through the chair, Senator Bernard, the members of the Board of Fish do get per diem for meeting. Mm-hmm. So, but this bill would not add any cost. It would be just simply another item they take up at a regular meeting.
But isn't it true, Senator Bundy, that the biologists that are looking at all these proposals, it does have a cost in horsepower and manpower and hours reviewing these proposals as they go along?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there's certainly costs to the department, and that's built into their budget. It doesn't isn't reflected in the Board of Fish budget.
Senator Bernard, follow up?
No, I was just trying to wrap my mind around, you know, I know they have to go in and stay at a hotel, and I just wanted to make sure I understood the fiscal impact. If there was none, then I wanted to just ask that question.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, there is someone from the Department of Fish and Game who's involved with the Board of Fish and available here for questions as well.
Okay. Senator Bundy, who is going to be coming out on the short side if this legislation were to pass?
I've thought about that because, you know, fish politics makes our politics look pretty mild. and if there's someone who thinks that if they just repeat the question often enough and loud enough that they'll get their way, maybe they'll feel that they're being shortchanged. But this in no way, other than the repetitive proposals, mm-hmm. which they may not address, I don't know. But just lengthening the time between proposals is going to keep anyone from being able to make a proposal. I suppose someone who has a good idea and was wanting to bring it up tomorrow,
sure,
have to wait another year, might inconvenience. I don't know. Board of Fish might come back and say the 3-year cycle for all its problems is best we can do.
Well, the Board of Fish is certainly an entity that needs to be dealt with. But I was wondering, have you heard anything from the fishermen that are out there? Obviously, we have people here that are on that are associated with some of the fish groups. But when I was commercial fishing, you know, we had a disdain for those white shirt, necktied fishermen that were up there while we're out there in the slime and the guts of that stuff, rocking around in our boats trying to bail them out. And back then, we were using pews to deal with them. And so because of that, you know, with all due respect to the people that are here, they didn't necessarily, it was kind of like the rank and file union people, and you got these white shirt mechanics out there. You know, we really looked down on those people.
Well, I don't know that this proposal would have any more adverse impact on the rank and file than it would on the skippers. I have not heard any negative or pushback on this. But that doesn't mean it isn't there. I just haven't heard it, I suppose.
Sure.
I would suspect there would be more sport. If there is concern and pushback, it would be probably sport-related, because somebody who lives in Georgia can put in a proposal to our Board of Fish, and we have to spend a year getting ready to address it. And they're more likely to be sport fish than commercial.
And I'm concerned about that as well. Any further questions of Senator Bundy? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Where's my microphone? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the bill has two things that it does. It recommends it's to get a recommendation as to whether the interval between meeting dates for the board should be expanded from the current three-year, and also some policy regarding proposals offered that are repetitive.
And yeah, that's correct, Mr. Chairman, Senator Thomas. And again, it's asking for a recommendation, and it makes no suggestion as to what the right answers might be.
And I'm looking at the fiscal note, and this is a zero fiscal note.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
But it was accompanied by a, for each fish board meeting, it was about $300,000. And then it depends on its location, but that's a rough estimate. And this is the cost for commercial fisheries division participation in the Board of Fisheries meeting, not the board members. How are the board members compensated? And I'm not sure if that was a question Senator Menard asked or not, and maybe I wasn't paying attention reading this, but.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Thomas, yes, they certainly receive a per diem. And again, as I said, I've got someone who's associated with the Board of Fish from Department of Fish and Game who can flesh out.
Okay.
All right. Your questions.
Thank you.
Or at least fillet them out.
Okay. Yeah.
Just, Senator Menard.
Do you have a copy, this same copy that we have?
Yes. And that's the cost for preparing for a meeting. So we do that every 3 years. It is possible if they came back with a recommendation of extending the period between meetings, there would be a negative fiscal impact to the state, because we wouldn't have to do this as often.
Okay.
Senator Bundy, if this was such a good idea, why wasn't it implemented years ago? And obviously the Board of Fish has been in place for decades, and this has gone on. Why is it not finally now being addressed?
Well, I can only speak from my own experience, and I didn't know it was such a problem until I heard from fishermen who are concerned about the department having to spend all this time and not getting good feedback, not getting good empirical data, not good scientific information before they have to make a new decision.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just brought to my attention. If it had been brought to my attention sooner, I guess I would have brought it to you sooner.
Okay. Senator Thomas.
It's probably just a sarcastic remark, but it's a 12-day meeting. As I read this, it's a 12-day meeting, and we got a 90-day session, 7 times 12, so it's 1/7 the length of the time of a legislative session.
You have a comment on that, Senator Bundy? Yeah. And that is true. Is that correct?
Yeah.
12-day meeting? Wow. Any further questions, Senator Bundy?
Well, we could look at making it a 90-day meeting, but I don't think it would make them any more productive than it did us.
Okay.
not, thank you very much for presenting this afternoon.
Thank you again for hearing the bill.
Jim Marcotte?
Yes.
Please come up and state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Jim Marcotte. I'm the Board of Fisheries Executive Director. I've been in that position for 3 years and with the board support section since 1995, and I'm based here in Juneau. And I'd like to offer a few brief comments to help provide a context for this bill. And maybe I can address some of the questions that have come up also. But the Board of Fisheries is on a three-year cycle. They deal with different fisheries in different areas of the state on a three-year rotation. And I did include earlier a package, a handout that's about 4 or 5 pages, a little fishing game logo on the first page there. And that's got some background information for you. The board does meet about 35 to 40 days a year. It's a pretty rigorous schedule. They have a work session in October, and then meetings scattered throughout more or less the school year, different geographic areas. And the meetings can be up to 10 or 11 days long. The board, prior to 1990, they dealt with all issues each year, and they would have one meeting for ground fish, or another meeting for crab, or another meeting for salmon. And they realized that that was a horrendous workload, and so they switched to a three-year cycle as a way to balance the needs of the public and the department in getting through the workload. So they basically cut the state up into sections and get around once every 3 years. And in general, that has served the process quite well. There are procedures in place for board to respond more quickly out of that three-year cycle as needed. There's an agenda change request policy where they can deal with putting extra things onto their list of things to take care of under certain conditions, and they can also respond to emergency petitions. So there are ways to
shortcut and get issues before the board and let the board deal with those. But one note on those out-of-cycle actions, they tend to have a lot less public input. And so if this three-year cycle were to be lengthened, it would be anticipated that there would be more of these out-of-cycle requests because people wouldn't be comfortable with waiting for some longer time period. So there are trade-offs involved. Let's see. In the handout, I included a list of where the board meetings have been and the overall pattern for the last 6 years, which is two complete three-year cycles for that. And we can provide information as needed to go back earlier than that. I also included the board meeting schedule for next year, and that's fairly typical, maybe a little bit light in the total number of days. And then I have a pie chart in there showing just the source of proposals, and to emphasize on that about half the proposals come in from the public. The department has to submit proposals through that same mechanism, and then the local fish and game advisory committees and stakeholder groups and sometimes village councils or other entities will send in proposals. Neither the department nor the board has developed a formal position on the bill at this point, but I believe the board and the department would both be comfortable with reviewing the assumptions built into that three-year cycle and work on developing recommendations to bring back. To sort out the questions on the fiscal note, we in the department just prepared that. And there's, you know, some minor cost. It might be a couple days of staff time and some number of hours of board member committee meetings and so forth. But it would be a small workload to develop some recommendations. So that's why we put in a zero fiscal note. But if the board cycle were to change, then we could look at some sort of an analysis of, is that a cost savings to the state and the public, or would that increase the cost? But to simply have a discussion and bring a recommendation back next January, it's a negligible cost. I guess I, for one, appreciate the approach of asking for that background information before trying to take an action on that. In essence, that's how I see the bill, is that it's asking for a discussion on the topic and,
and that's always a healthy thing to do, to review this approach. So with that, I guess I'll conclude. And I guess the one other thing. This is one aspect of looking at the overall board process. There are many other ways that we look at how the department pulls together the paperwork for board meetings, how we use our website, how we arrange the meetings, training for board members, committee process. There are many other elements that go into having an effective board process and looking for those efficiencies. So this is one of several kinds of things that might be on an overall list that we're on an ongoing basis, always looking for improvements. So, thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Marcotte from Senator Thomas?
Just to make sure I understand then, and I need to disclose, Jim is a friend and my neighbor, actually. So, but this figure here, the $296,000, which is a varying number depending on, that's an annual number, correct? Because you are meeting every year. It's just different aspects of fish, groups of fish, or am I misinterpreting it? Because it shows 2003 and 4. 0405, you got the, you know, and there are different aspects of the fishing cycle, or am I misreading that as far as?
Okay, through the chair, Senator Thomas, this one-page sheet is an attempt to just give you a feel for the order of magnitude of the cost to the department, and this is actually the cost workup for one division for one 12-day meeting.
Right.
So this is not really an annual cost,
right.
But it shows that there's considerable cost to the state as a whole to prepare for these meetings. But this is not a comprehensive cost of a board meeting, because there are other divisions involved. And then within the board support section, we support local Fish and Game Advisory Committee representatives traveling to the meeting, and our sound system and getting our board members to the meeting and that sort of thing. So
that's what I'm getting at, I guess. But this is just part of the expense, half of the expense on an annual basis, because you meet every year. Is that correct?
Through the chair, it's more than a single meeting a year. There's typically one large meeting each year, and this is representative of a single large meeting.
Right.
But there may be other smaller 4-day meetings or 5-day meetings, and there's those would be at an additional cost.
Okay, I just wanted to make it clear. I don't have a lot of knowledge about this, but the way it was first talked about was a 3-year cycle. But in the 3-year cycle, there's a meeting every year, at least one meeting every year regarding some aspects of it. That's right.
Correct. And through the chair, the
reference to the 3 years was every 3 years we get back to one of those thirds that we're talking about. Right.
Correct. And in that handout, the middle page, that's, I'm sorry for the very small type, but it shows all the meetings that have taken place in the last 6 years. And you'll see that overall cycle repeats itself every 3 years, but some of the meetings might be 6 days, 9 days, 5 days, and they total up to maybe 35 to 40 days each year.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, regarding the other aspect of the bill, the repetitive proposals, I see anywhere from two on that same page that we're looking at, anywhere from 200 and some to 500 proposals that are reviewed. And some, in one case, are 258 proposals just on the Upper Cook Inlet fin fish?
Correct. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Menard.
Yes. As executive director for the Board of Fisheries, would it be fair to characterize your position is somewhat neutral, and you can be supportive of Senate Bill 137 for a conversation, and is that kind of where I'm gathering that your position is?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Menard, yes.
Okay.
The short answer.
So if this is a money-saving issue for the state, why is the Board of Fish so hesitant to go ahead and endorse the legislation?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that there's any hesitancy to endorse the legislation. I would sort of maybe just pan back to the workload. They just got through with dealing with 390 proposals, and that was enough on their plate for this year. They do track the legislation, but
for this year, you mean they're finished for 2009?
Mr. Chairman, not the calendar year 2009, mm-hmm. but what we would call our meeting cycle. Okay. So October 2008 through March of 2009.
Okay.
So their main workload, sure, for their meeting cycle, okay, has been completed. There's no opposition that the board would have on this. It's and again, the bill is simply asking for a discussion or a review, and in general, that's part of an ongoing theme that the board always has of looking for ways to do things better.
Okay.
My last,
Senator Thomas.
My last question. And I see that the wording of the bill is that the interval between meeting dates for the board should be expanded. And that's the only choice, I guess, the bill is giving people, not whether they might want to close it more. It can only be expand the time frame rather than compress the time frame.
Mr. Marcotte, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's the current wording of the bill. I think in a review, and the review would involve some discussions with the public, some discussions with board members, some number crunching with staff on looking at what are those trade-offs and coming up with numbers. And I think in that analysis, it could come up to be anything. I don't think that review would be limited by looking at only an expansion. It's just looking at, is the current three-year cycle that we've had since 1990, is that the best model at this point in time?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. There's no further questions, Mr. Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Bernard.
I just wanted to compliment you as well as the sponsor of the bill, because I think we're at a year we're not dealing with the G and some of these other issues, and there's many citizens in the state of Alaska that want to have this conversation on how does the Board of Fisheries operate. And I think it's excellent timing on Senator Bundy's part to bring this bill forward. So I look forward to a healthy debate on this. So with that, that's my comment.
Mr. Marcotte, as we look at what's going on here, the priority sometimes to try and save the state money, especially when we have revenues that are down, I think is admirable, and that certainly can be upper. But the priority that I have, having fished commercially, is to make sure that that person that's out there in the water checking his nets and doing those kind of things is able to go ahead and feed his family. Does this in any way affect that person that's out there in some little skiff trying to make a living?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think passage of this bill has an adverse effect, because the bill is simply having that discussion. Mm-hmm. But the board is acutely aware of being responsive to the resource, sure, and to the, okay, stakeholders, and that is part of that trade-off. If you tell people you have to wait 5 years to get your issue in front of the board, that is a potential barrier. But there are ways to deal with things on a shorter time frame.
Okay, thank you. If there's no further questions of Mr. Marcotte, we'll get next. Our next person up here, Jerry McHugh.
Just one quick question.
I'm sorry, Senator
Bernard.
And the
way to deal with that is the out-of-the-cycle requests, correct?
Correct. The out-of-cycle requests, in a sense, that's a safety valve. The board,
agenda change or something, you said, yeah.
Yeah, emergency petitions and agenda change requests. Okay. But again, there are pros and cons of those.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marcotte. Yes, next, we have Jerry McHugh. Mr. McHugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry McHugh. I represent United Fishermen of Alaska. Mr. Marcotte kind of took some of the things I was going to talk about. But anyway, I'll talk about a couple of things, I guess. One is we support the bill to have the conversation. There is some people, to answer your question, Mr. Chairman, there's the crab fishermen are kind of concerned about a three-year cycle, not going away from a three-year cycle. But they're willing to have the conversation and talk about it. It might end up that the crab guys would want to stay on a three-year cycle and not the finfish guys. But these meetings, we just had a meeting in Cordova in December 1 through 6, I think it was. And I think our next meeting is 2011. Well, our little organization is already looking at the next board meeting, plus how we, it's not going to be in Cordova, so it's probably going to be in Anchorage or Valdez, most likely Valdez. So we got to figure out all these costs, and that's one thing people aren't thinking about is the cost of these small organizations. And if they're not out in Dillingham, and you got to go to Anchorage, you got to figure out how those people can get there. And there's sometimes they just can't get there. And so costs have went way up since the old days when we had only a few proposals and not so many conflicts and things like that. And the costs have went way up. So I think it's a very appropriate conversation to have. I myself personally would like to see it extended to some kind of time and go, because these regulations, these allocation plans are in place that takes care of a lot of these different finfish issues, but we never even get to a cycle of salmon, and we're tweaking them around again. You know, sometimes we're tweaking them around and they've already been working really well. So I think it's a good conversation piece, and we need to have the conversation. When that's all said and done, then people that support it or don't support it will have that conversation in different gear types around the whole state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions, Mr. McCune, by members of the committee? I do have one. UFA, how many crab, how many shellfish fishermen are you have in UFA? Are there any?
We have, Mr. Chairman, we have two different groups that have crab fishermen, plus some individuals that are in different groups that do crab fish. There's some guys out of Kenai. There's the Bering Sea guys. There's three different groups that have crabbers in there. So I got a lot of input from a lot of people from around the state, as I always do on these kind of issues. And some people were not too hot about changing the cycle, but they realized this is just a conversation. We're just asking for a report from the Board of Fish. So then we'll have an actual conversation. Once we get the report back and it's negative, then we'll probably have a real good conversation.
Okay. No further questions, Mr. McCune. Thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, we have Bob Thorstenson with the Southeast Sanders. One comment I would say that my earlier comments about white shirt fishermen, also the success I have of commercial fishermen is by the size, the length of their belt and the color of their shirt. Mr. Thorstenson, please.
Mr. Chairman, Bob Thorstenson, Executive Director of Southeast Alaska Seniors Association. I also represent the Alaska Scalp Association, Alaska Crab Coalition. Both of those groups, although they're not excited about changing the cycles, they are both in support of this bill. Because the bill just starts the conversation. This, you know, the cycle used to be every year. Having it every third year and moving around the state is a vast improvement. I mean, one of the biggest problems, if you look at any other business in this state or in the country, there's not a young guy buying a sport charter boat or sport lodge or investing in a commercial fishing operation. You only have, you know, right now in Southeast, you got, you know, 30 months or so till your next cycle. You got about 24 months till you start writing your proposals. Then all of your regulations can just be up in the air like so many juggling balls. So the consistency that this has for both the sport and commercial fishing and personal use community for long term is it's the only business I know in this state where you could be right out of business in a couple of years. So the consistency and the lack of durability by having these rapid fire cycles is a problem. In his infinite wisdom, Senator Bundy, certainly by making this just a conversation piece and allowing the board and the executive director of the board to come back with this conversation, limited the, you know, hey, we think it should be 5 years or 4 years or 3 years. Hey, and the right thing might be 3 years for scallop guys and crab guys, but it might be 5 years or 10 years for Southeast Alaska salmon or for Bristol Bay or something else. So there, you know, it's not necessarily a one size fits all. When people were talking about cost savings, the numbers you'll see will be from Sportfish and Comfish and from the board itself. And they'll be talking about how much you're going to save in hotel rooms and airfares and flying all these folks and hundreds of people to a town like Sitka and sequestering them there, having the meetings, renting the hall, paying for the airfare. That's just part of the cost. The main cost is that approximately between 15 to 25% of every researcher, biologist, biometrician, and major manager in this state is wrapped up into a three-year Board of Fish cycle. So they take an average of anywhere between 3-4 months for maybe the folks that don't have big issues, and up to 1 year, as a sponsor stated. In every 3 years, instead of managing the fish, instead of finding out the right science, they're actually going and giving a report. I mean, if you guys left your work aside and you spent a sixth of your time or a third of your time just giving people reports as to what you're doing, then you're not doing when you're giving your reports. On the other hand, I mean, that the balance, of course, is the public accountability. No other state has this type. I've had a couple of my clients come up from Washington State, and they said, this is fantastic. You know, you have interactivity with the public. The public can just come up with this proposal, and people actually have to listen to you. And all the other 49 states, the director of fisheries or whoever it is, and the commission just goes off in their own little private room and makes their own decisions, and it becomes just nothing but a political process, and it has nothing to do with the public. This is a great public process. This legislation, and it has nothing to do with disparaging that public process, but when there's these estimates of 300,000 and that type of thing, this, if the board decides to start changing cycles and lengthening some of the cycles in those parts of the state, it's my belief that this will save the state millions of dollars, because we're in this position where we have these folks that are, I mean, it's not just the travel cost. It's the salaries. It's the salaries. It's the overhead. It's the health care. It's insurance. It's the pension costs of all these employees that you're having travel all over the state and spend all this extra time. That's pretty duplicative. There's one of the things that really occurred to me this last cycle in Southeast. Our number two manager quit and took a lower-ranking job just so he wouldn't have to go through the Board of Fish cycle again. So, you know, it's just winnowing out some of our better and brightest people, because they're there for science and they're there to commit themselves to the resource. They're not there to have to go in front of this body and give a report and feel like they're going back to school in oral presentation 101. One of the things that's brought up in Southeast in our Confish division, the boys talk about this just like in the movie Platoon, when the guy says, well, how long are you here for? You know, I got 159 days in NAM, 159 days in the wake-up, then I go back to the real world. These guys actually talk about their retirement in terms of Board of Fish cycles. That's just how much they love this process. You know, you go, how many cycles you got? Well, I got 3 cycles in a wake-up, and I'm gone. And some guys actually will quit their job a year ahead of time and give up that service to the state just so they don't have to go through a Board of Fish cycle. So it's becoming a real problem. The public input part is good. The repetitive proposal part is almost ridiculous. I mean, you don't have to be a U.S. citizen. You could sit there in Siberia. I mean, Osama bin Laden could make proposals to the Board of Fish, and the Board of Fish would actually have to take the proposal and study it, take a look at it, say, gee whiz, you know, that makes sense, and then they have to do some research and some background and write upon it. Every single proposal is taken that seriously. There's no other. I mean, it's a beautiful public process in a sense, but it almost becomes anarchy to the point where one person could just sit back. I've had members of our organization send in 67 proposals, and there's nothing that anybody can do to limit those. And that's something the board, you know, that's part of this bill, and I think the board needs to look at it. So it's a good bill. It doesn't force anybody to do anything, and I think you know, we respect this process. We believe in the Board of Fish process. The people are fantastic. The volunteers that serve their time, as well as the staff and Mr. Marcotte and his staff and the Fish and Game folks, we are 100% on board with those folks. We're really excited about the job they do. We just want to make sure to enable them to take a good look and see if they can't do a perhaps a better job and refine the way their business is done.
Thank you, Mr. Thorson. Any questions, Mrs. Thorson?
Wow, I have some thoughts. Because when you're hiring these scientists, these biologists, they know what the job, when you're hired, that's what the job description is. They know they're going to have to be involved in these cycles. Is that not correct? I mean, I had a son that commercial fished in Bristol Bay. I have a brother-in-law that's the fish and game biologist and Nome director. And so I've lived this a little bit, too, and several of my friends, very close friends, are on the Board of Fisheries. So I guess I just don't buy into, well, we're, you know, it upsets me in the climate we're in on with good jobs and what's available, that people are disgruntled about their jobs because of the public process that our state has chosen, and I think it's a good thing to allow public process. And so I'm just making that comment.
Go ahead. Through the chair, Senator, we have some very talented people who are very gifted speakers, very gifted presenters, as well as very gifted scientists. But I think oftentimes when somebody gets into UAS or goes to Fairbanks and becomes a fisheries biologist and they decide to become a fisheries manager, some people may have that type of foresight as in your family, where they understand, gee, you know, every 3 years I'm going to have to upset the apple cart and go through this whole process. Myself personally, I took a job with as executive director of association, and I hadn't been to a cycle in my own region because I stayed away from these Board of Fish meetings. And to be perfectly honest, and I don't mean to be a crybaby about it, but it is absolutely, when I quit this job, it will be a month before the last Board of Fish cycle I have to attend, so I don't have to go through it, because it's the worst thing that I do every 3 years. It's really, there's a lot of confrontation. It's not the sport commercial as much that's confrontational. It's the commercial versus commercial. Mm-hmm. You know, your neighbor versus neighbor, and brother versus brother, and it's a very confrontational, it can be a confrontational system, and if there's a way to improve it, we'd like to see that. As far as the scientists and the biologists knowing that they're going into this, and you take a job in the state of Alaska, and you're going to have to be a good presenter and everything else as well. That's a fair statement and fair enough. However, I don't think that when folks are sitting down at UAS and they decide to not become a communications major because they really like to dive into fisheries research and science, I don't think that's on their mind until they actually end up over in the Blywood Palace over there and get the job. So I appreciate your comment.
Okay. Well, Mr. Dorson, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bundy, any closing comments?
It's exhausting.
I want to keep you any longer. Want to reiterate that the fisheries in Alaska has changed a lot, probably since even when you commercial fish, but certainly from when the Board of Fish first started. So it's healthy to just review what we've been doing, mm-hmm. and decide maybe we're doing it right and we should continue, maybe we should make some adjustments, and that's all the bill asks for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Senator Bundy. If not, we'll go ahead and announce that the next meeting will be held at 3:30 on Tuesday, April 7th, 2009. With that, this meeting is adjourned.